ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you ever think that maybe the people making all the important decisions don't have a clue what they're doing?
The UK Prime Minister is facing increasing pressure to step down.
It is ridiculous that Australia is facing a domestic gas price crisis.
They take our money, they make us look like fools.
I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we take a look at every terrible decision that led to where we are today. Find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Anthony Albanese is about to break a major election promise. So why did he continually say he wouldn't touch generous negative gearing and capital gains tax breaks, only to renege just over a year later? Today, host of ABC Radio's AM program, Melissa Clark, on the Prime Minister's Gamble. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Mel, the PM, when he was campaigning before the last election, he was asked a lot about negative gearing, and I mean a lot. And he was like, no way, he wasn't touching it. In his words, it was completely off the table.
Oh, he was very clear about this.
Negative gearing and the capital gains tax discount. Why aren't you willing to touch those?
Because the experts say that what that potentially would do is diminish supply, not increase it. And the key to fixing the housing issues is supply.
In one of the pre-election debates on Channel 7, he was asked to confirm that negative gearing is off the table, and he said, yes, it is off the table.
Negative gearing is off the table?
Yeah, it's off the table.
It's another time when he was pressed about would Labor want to return to its previous election promises on negative gearing and capital gains tax, and he would point out that he has ruled out making changes multiple times.
The proof is we haven't made any changes.
And do you rule out future changes, Prime Minister?
Well, I've done that multiple times.
So he was very clear this wasn't part of the plan for a second term of an Albanese government.
Yes, but then things change, right?
Oh, they do.
So here comes the backflip, or if you like, the broken promise.
This is really interesting because Anthony Albanese as a Prime Minister has always been one who's talked a lot about the virtues of delivery. He likes to talk about his government being a government that delivers on promises. It's not quite that simple because he has backflipped before. You know, in the first term of the Albanese government, there was the Stage 3 tax cuts. He'd promised not to wind back tax cuts that had already been legislated by the previous coalition government that would benefit middle and higher income earners. But he eventually did agree to do it and changed it so that it would help out lower and middle income earners more. But the point was that having ruled out changing Stage 3 tax cuts, he then did. And I think the lesson he took from that was you can occasionally, maybe very rarely, break a promise, but you have to be able to justify it and you have to be able to sell it.
That's sort of what the Treasurer Jim Chalmers was saying, wasn't he, at a press conference this week. You know, he was asked about trust, voters' trust in a government.
And he was talking about needing to make the right decisions for the right reasons and explaining it.
I think the best way to build trust is to make the right decisions for the right reasons. And there are genuine intergenerational concerns and pressures in our budget, in our tax system, in our housing market and in our economy more broadly.
All right, well, let's come back in a moment, Mel, to how Anthony Albanese and the Treasurer will defend this going forward. But why don't we just step through now what we are expecting to change? Now, negative gearing, we better just explain again what that is. It's a really good perk, though, isn't it, for owners of investment properties?
Yeah, it's a really important one because it makes a really big difference to a lot of landlords. You know, more than a million landlords across the country benefit from this. So a negatively geared investment property is basically one that runs at a loss. And so what you can do is make those losses tax deductible against all of your income. So basically, if you have a rental property and you're getting in $20,000 a year in rent, but you're spending $29,000 a year on interests and repairs, basically that's a $9,000 loss, and then that is reduced from your taxable income.
But that was seen as a really kind of good thing because it meant that people would invest in the property market, maybe build new homes, and then there'd be more properties for rent. That was the argument, right?
Yeah, it makes investment more attractive because, especially when combined with capital gains tax discounts, which I'm sure we'll get to, it does mean there is less risk involved if you have a loss.
All right, okay. So ahead of the budget, what do we know the government is actually going to change in relation to negative gearing?
Well, there's a lot of speculation.
Yeah, right.
We know they're going to do something. So the question comes down to how can they adjust this? What potential changes could they make? We've long talked about, should there just be a cap on the number of houses you can negatively gear? Like maybe it's okay if you, you know, can deduct your losses from one property, but if you're a bit of an investment baron, do you really need to get that kind of tax concession for your 20 investment properties? So that's one option. Another one is limiting this tax break just to new builds so that you've got that incentive or a little bit more of a safety net to invest in a property if you're going to see a new house built. But you don't get that tax break for an already existing house. So that might encourage you to help with housing supply. And then there's a question of, well, whatever of these changes the government might land on, are they going to grandfather the properties that are already negatively geared? Like, how do we transition to a new system? That's a really big question as well.
Yeah, absolutely, particularly for current investors. Okay, so that's negative gearing, Mel. Now, there is this other rather generous tax concession in place, which is called the capital gains tax discount. Now, that seems to be in the firing line as well. So just again, in a simple way, Mel, explain what that is.
I'll do my best, but I think it's good we're talking about both of them together because they actually really work together quite significantly. So back to basics, capital gain, it's the money you make when you sell an asset. As long as you've held it for 12 months and you sell it, the money you make on that is a capital gain. So like way back in the early 1980s, you didn't pay any tax on that profit that you would make. Paul Keating changed this by introducing the capital gains tax and basically meant that you would be taxed at the same rate that you are taxed on your income, but you got a discount based on the inflation rate. Now, that was changed in 1999 by John Howard. He changed it so that the discount wasn't just based on inflation, but you got a flat 50% off the capital gains tax. So your tax on an asset that you sell is half of the tax that you pay on your earned income. And that really encouraged investment.
Okay, so that's how it works. But now, what is the government, again, Mel, planning on doing here? Because we know they're going to do something.
That's right. We know that a lot of ideas have been kicked around and they've ranged from changing that discount from 50% to just lowering it to 25%. There's also been discussion about, well, what about 30% or 35% or 33%? There's also questions about, well, should we have different treatment for new assets and old assets? That gets quite complicated. Should it only be on housing? This is a really key. What about shares and crypto? Should we treat them differently from housing? So you can see that there's a lot of different ways the government could land. And the fact the government is so close to releasing the budget and still hasn't actually sent it to the printers yet tells you just how much they've been hemming and hawing over about precisely where to land on these policies.
All right. Okay. So, Mel, it is clear that negative gearing and capital gains tax will be targeted in the budget, although we don't know exactly how just yet. We should note also that they will be targeting the tax on family trusts. But just tell me then, what is the government actually trying to achieve by breaking this election promise?
So the government is framing this as about generational inequality.
The really core principle of my government is no one held back, no one left behind. And the truth is that young people feel like they're not getting a fair crack at the moment. So any changes that we put in the budget or indeed while we're in government will be very much focused on those principles.
It's saying that these two things in particular, negative gearing and capital gains tax discount, have made housing such a popular form of investment and effectively made it a way of managing wealth for well-off Australians and effectively older Australians, because they're the ones that hold their assets. And when we consider that housing affordability has become really emblematic of the frustrations that younger generations feel about their prospects in the modern economy, the government sees this as being a way of trying to level that playing field a bit between the generations who benefit from tax concessions to invest in property and the generations that feel completely locked out of the property market altogether.
All right, so they're hoping, are they, that this will actually bring the cost of housing down? And will that really happen? Because I reckon it always just goes up, Mel.
That's what everyone has been investing based on that assumption, because I think everyone thinks that. So that's why it's become such a popular place to invest, because we have seen that in Australia. The property market just goes up. The only question is at what speed. Look, so much depends on the details. It's really hard to be definitive. But if we just talk in general terms, if you reduce a tax break, that might mean some investors might exit or choose not to enter the property market. So if that happens, that could make more homes available for owner-occupiers. It could mean it's a little cheaper if there's less competition for them. So just on a theoretical basis, that could happen. The flip side is that could mean fewer rentals, though, which could push up prices in the rental market. But again, that's going to depend on the treatment of if there's any differentiation between new homes and existing homes. So it's really hard to say, but I think it's fair to characterise a lot of economic thought here that any changes that are made aren't going to make massive differences to housing supply. But at a time when housing supply is so constrained and it is such a point of frustration for younger Australians, that any little bit would be politically welcomed, even if the economic effect isn't enormous.
All right. And by the way, it will make the government a bit of money at the same time, right?
It definitely will. But again, it comes down to the details. If there's a lot of grandfathering in place, it would take a long time to realise a lot of extra tax revenue coming to the government. So much is going to come down to the details.
All right. Well, Mel, of course, by now we all know that Bill Shorten, he took a similar set, not the same, but similar set of policy ideas to the election in 2019, and that did not go well for him. So is Anthony Albanese, do you think, convinced at this point that voters will deliver a different response to these sort of tax changes?
Yeah, there's a few things here. I mean, Labor was certainly scarred by that loss in 2019. I think there is a feeling that times have changed from where we were in 2019. And Anthony Albanese's really got two things here that is driving him. One's the opportunity and one's the motive. So the opportunity is he is presiding over a government that has enormous political capital, right? He has strong support, as we've seen from the federal election result. He has a weakened opposition. He's got multiple pathways to get legislation through the Senate. And he's 2 years away from another election. The other thing that helps him with opportunity is the demographics have changed. Even since 2019, we have more younger voters now than we do baby boomers. The question of motive is the other one. I mean, the government wants to differentiate income earned through labour, through work, versus income you earn through investment. Passive income, they call it. We should prioritise and give primacy to money earned through work, not money earned through investments or property or inheritance. That's a really big part of Labor philosophy. So seeing the opportunity, there is a chance to work on those kinds of political beliefs that Anthony Albanese wants to take this opportunity to try to do.
All right. So Anthony Albanese, Mel, he thinks he's on a winner. But I guess broken election promises in politics, they're not easily forgotten, are they, particularly by opposition parties? So he will have to live with that going forward.
I think the really tricky bit for Anthony Albanese in this case, in breaking these promises, will be to say, well, yes, we have generational inequality to deal with, but is it really present now in a way that it wasn't 12 months ago when I was asking for your vote? He will need to explain, if this is what he intended to do, why has it changed from 12 months ago?
Melissa Clark is the host of AM on ABC Radio. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed, audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily, we'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.